If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
I think when you're starting out, you got to be real cautious with your capital. And then I think as you grow, you got to be real cautious with your time. A lot of us don't start a real estate investment company and say, okay, hey, we're going to go get $1 million to run this company. It's like you're shoestringing it, man. You're doing this on your own dime and you can't just start hiring people. So
welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Devin Elder is a real estate entrepreneur and sole owner of DJE Texas Management Group, LLC, which manages all aspects of acquisition, repositioning, and sale of single-family and multifamily properties in Central Texas. DJE has successfully completed over 200 real estate renovation projects and acquired close to 2,200 units of multifamily in Central Texas, valued at over $212 million. Devin Elder, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sam. How are you?
I'm great, man. Great. Pleased to have you on. Thanks for taking the time out of your super busy day to chat with me this morning. Same questions I ask everybody who comes on. Can you give us a brief overview of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there?
Yep. I started out, went to college, did the corporate track for about 10 years, worked for some of the largest employers in San Antonio, Texas, doing sales, marketing, operations, a little bit of everything, but got the entrepreneurial bug, started buying houses as an investment, single family rentals. So that was the start of it. And this is the first project I ever bought was in 2012. Today, I run DJE Texas Management Group, which is does a lot of things. Mostly though, like the kind of core focus of what we do is multifamily stuff in San Antonio, 100 to 300 unit projects in our backyard. And so we're vertically integrated. We've got our own property management company. We've got, you know, the private equity side, which is kind of where I spend most of my time. And, you know, at this point, I think we've got like 430 active investor positions. So that might be one investor invested in five deals. That's five positions. Might be one investor invested in one deal. But current portfolio, there's over 400 investor positions. And that's what we want to continue doing is buying these large multifamily projects. We've kind of got some economies of scale. We've got efficiencies in our market. We're a known, credible buyer with these brokers bringing deals out to market. They know we can close and we don't mess around. So we'll make it easy on them. And that's kind of have the machine up and running now to just kind of rinse and repeat and continue to buy and operate stuff in San Antonio.
Man, that's amazing. Good for you. What was the first, like when you, so you started buying single family in 2012. When did you hang up the cleats on that?
Well, I've still got a few. We got a couple of development projects. I've got probably 12 rentals that I'll keep forever. So not completely out of it. You know, those things have kind of been around. But I started buying the multifamily in 2015. And, you know, I bought a 6-unit by myself, no partners. And then I partnered on 75 units. And after that, I was like, hey, I'm ready to do this. Next purchase was 130 units. With I say no partners, but I, you know, we syndicated it, so we had lots of investment partners. But I was like, you know, by that third multifamily deal, all right, I'm running this deal. And then after that, it's just, I mean, I like to say the fish are jumping in the boat now, right? I mean, it just, I don't want to make light of it because these are big, you know, $20 million deals that we're buying. But the I remember we were doing due diligence in December on a deal that we just closed, and one of the teammates was out there. She's kind of a new hire. She said, are you excited? You know, we're out here. We got this whole team doing the due diligence. We're buying a $20 million building. And I was like, nope, not really. I mean, it's kind of by design, it's kind of become boring, right? That's what we want it to be. So that's kind of where the state of things today. And I'm much more, you know, a CEO and a business owner than the guy doing everything. And for years, man, I did everything, right? I mean, I was graphic design, I was accounting, I was investor relations, all of it, man. But now it's, you know, just by virtue of growing, you can't, there's just not enough hours in the day. So we got really great team in place for a lot of the different business functions.
What were some of the pain points that you encountered along the way that kind of forced you to step out of those, you know, I guess jobs or maybe roles that you were maybe taking on before, say graphic design or whatever else you may have mentioned?
Just time in the day, man. I mean, you know, I think when you're starting out, it's a real, you got to be real cautious with your capital. And then I think as you grow, you got to be real cautious with your time, right? Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the transition I had to make. I mean, you could hire anybody to do anything. If you pay them enough, they're going to do a great job. But, you know, a lot of us don't start a real estate investment company and say, okay, hey, we're going to go get $1 million to run this company. It's like, you're shoestringing it, man. You're doing this on your own dime and you can't just start hiring people. So it was a very kind of slow process for me to grow the team. I mean, the first thing I did, this is years ago, was hire somebody overseas in the Philippines full-time to just start taking some tasks off my plate, right? And that was an interesting experience. It was a little bit painful in that it was so affordable, right? But then the trade-off was I really had to explain things to the nth degree. But that taught me, you know, everything's got a light and a dark side to it, right? The dark side of having somebody overseas was it was sometimes painful to communicate and everything. And I couldn't really delegate stuff. I couldn't just throw stuff over and have her do it. The light side of the situation was that I got really good at building processes, systems, step-by-steps, videos, and things like that. And it forced me to take 3 steps back and learn to be a good leader and delegator rather than the cowboy out there just doing everything himself, which is fun. That fits my personality. But there's not enough hours in the day. So having her for a couple of years really taught me, I think, how to be a better leader and a better delegator. So now all our teams here, you know, we have an office manager, an investor relations manager. We have a brokerage. So we've got a broker running that. We've got a property management company. We've got somebody running that whole company with, you know, dozens of employees. And so, you know, that was kind of the progress there. And it's always a balancing act. I mean, we still look at marketing functions or different functions and say, do we do it in-house? Do we try to hire somebody for it? I think it's always a balancing act with that stuff.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's amazing, first off, that you took the time to process those things out. And it is a balancing act, I think, when you start, because you've got to figure out what you can afford to hire and then what you have to do yourself. And also then you're worried about deal flow. Then you're worried about capital raising. And so it's at first, it's an enormous juggling act. So obviously bringing on your VA in the Philippines was one of the first things you did. What were some of the first hires you made in-house? Like here stateside, you said, man, this is somebody that's got to assist me.
Right. So it just became apparent as the company grew that I wasn't going to be able to have that virtual assistant deliver at the level I needed to. It's actually a really cool story. I'm in a mastermind group with some other multifamily guys. And I said, hey, I've got a really great assistant. I can't keep her, but man, she knows real estate. She's been awesome. You know, she's not going to be a $30 an hour person. But you're not paying that. And a buddy of mine in California ended up hiring her. This is like 2 years ago. I check in with him and every now and then. She still works for him. So it was a really nice story there. But I needed somebody here in my office. And so I hired an office manager. That was my first hire. And that's been a couple of years now too. And that helped me just because, again, one man show, you buy one deal, you can kind of pull it off. You know, you start to get 2, 3 and you go, well, okay, this is not a one man show anymore. So just an office manager to help corral all time, really try to give her everything I possibly can to get it off my plate. And then after that, it was the investor relations manager. That was last year, just because, hey, we're really growing. And it's clear that these investor conversations are really impacting our business and we're growing our ability to raise capital. But again, I'm the CEO. Wasn't the best use of my time to have those calls every single day. Although I still jump on calls with investors, whatever, all the time, but just in terms of somebody consistently showing up and doing it. So that was kind of the next hire so 3 of us right now in the private, what I call the private equity side of the business, right? Raising capital and investor relations. And then the property management companies, like it's a separate, literally a separate LLC. I hired a guy with a lot of experience to run the whole thing. And that's been amazing.
Yeah, that's interesting. Was that a hard transition? Because these, obviously our investors are very near and dear to what we do. I mean,
yes,
as much as they are limited partners, yes, in all of these deals that we undertake, but they're also very personal relationships. I think anytime we're raising money, this is a personal conversation. How was that transition for you when you started bringing, you know, new name, new face? Hey, you know, you and I have been talking for years and we've done lots of deals. by the way, talk to this guy. Sometimes handing those keys off to somebody else is tough. How'd you navigate that?
Yeah, great point. I think a lot of it had to do with where we were in our growth as a company. I think when you're starting out, you know, and you're doing your first couple of deals and you're raising capital from that inner circle, friends and family, colleagues, it's got to be you. I mean, people are investing in you, and people are still investing in me, but now we can say, hey, look at all these deals we sold. Look how long we've been doing this. Look at our track record of never losing capital. Look at the track record and the company is more important now than, hey, Devin seems like a nice guy. I trust him. I met him at a barbecue, which is how all these investor relationships started, right? Sure. Friends, neighbors, coworkers. I mean, very organic, and it's still organic. I mean, we just grow through referrals almost exclusively, right? So I think it just got to a point where the company's track record now can kind of stand on its own. And it was also really important for me to pick the right person for that role. Obviously, this is a person I want around for a long time to grow with the company. And now he's built relationships with investors that didn't initiate with me, which is really cool, right? But there's also, I think, like, as entrepreneurs, I suffer from, man, nobody can do this like me. Sure. Nobody can build this website like me. Nobody can write this newsletter like me. Nobody can have an investor conversation like me. You know, nobody can do these 100 things, man. This is why it's successful, because of me. Right. And then you hand it off and you go, dang, that person's, they might be doing a little better than me. I didn't, you know, so there's that pride there you need to put aside. And that's the goal. Hopefully you're hiring people that are better than you. That's certainly the case with the guy that's running our property management company. I mean, talk about a skill set I don't have. And he's telling me how we should run this thing, which is the way it should be. So it was a matter of building the company track record to a point where I could hand some of that stuff off. And I think people appreciate that, hey, Devin's got to run this company. And so I can't be on 3 hours of investor calls a day and effectively do what I need to do.
You're right. You're right about that. But the point is, hiring, you know, people better than yourself obviously is the goal. That's awesome that you've been able to do that. Like, you know, just in a short period of time, is your background in management? Is it in growing and scaling? I mean, is that something you have formal training in, or is it just something where you just read a lot of books and said, hey man, this is where we want to go with this?
Yeah, it's more the latter, right? I am absolutely a student. I'm a part of a lot of mastermind groups. I try to be the least smart guy in the room anywhere I go. And we do some teaching and coaching where that's not the case, where, hey, I am the expert in the room and that's fine. But that's by design. I've spent for years now very intentionally investing in masterminds and in training to be around guys that are further down the road than me. And that has just been, it's invaluable. You know, I've since day one in real estate, I mean, first thing I did that got me in real estate is I gave $10,000 to a coaching program.
Sure.
You know? And hey man, you know, the nice thing about that was I was paying attention then. I had high hopes for my future once I handed over that check, which at the time was a tremendous amount of money for me.
For sure.
But there's something interesting that happens there, because the information they're teaching, look, it's the information's ubiquitous. It's everywhere, right? But getting in that group of people and then committing money. When I did that, it was like, well, this has to work, right? I'm in this now. So, and man, it did. So I'm a big fan of paying for shortcuts. And if there's a coach or a group that can accelerate me, man, let's pay for it. Because the real commodity here that is precious is time. And so I am happy to pay for the fast forward button, almost to a fault, you know? And so that's really kind of what I attribute my growth to, is being able to be around the right crew. You know, the right guys that have already done it, because, you know, we're not trying to build a rocket to Mars here. We're not doing something new. We're just trying to run real estate deals really well. And that business model has been around forever. Somebody before me has done it, and I can just try to learn from them and replicate it.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. One that you obviously are, you know, sharing that, because I think that's absolutely something that we just have to focus on, is paying for shortcuts. You know, one of the things I think in the real estate world at large is that it's kind of hard to navigate and know who the right people are to pay. I mean, real estate, just like everything else, there's a lot of good information and there's a lot of bad information, and you can write a check for 10 grand. And just because you wrote the check for 10 grand doesn't mean you're going to get anything out of it necessarily. Cause I've spent, you know, I'm probably with you in the close to six figures at least in coaching and people like that. And that's in the last 2 years. And I go, okay, you know, good amounts of that have been great. And then there's also been, I'm like, just wave goodbye. Like, this was a waste of my time and money. So, you know, how does somebody vet the person that they want to learn from or the mastermind they want to get into? Like, what's is there something you use if you're still investing in these? Like, what's your criteria for getting involved?
Yeah, it's a great point. It's like any kind of vendor relationship or hire that you're going to make, you know, you're putting out substantial time and energy and money into it. You want to make sure it's worth it. These days, I'm kind of narrowed down to a couple groups that I'm kind of in for the long haul on.
Sure.
One of them I'll just give a shout out to is GoBundance. Has been a tremendous group, been part of that since 2017. And I cannot speak highly enough about the quality of guys in that group. And that's not a pitch. That's just, you know, that's my experience with it. I think, like anything, you know, how do you find a good contractor, good plumber, whatever? It's like you're hoping you got a good buddy that can give you a reference, right? And that's kind of been my thing. Is now that first group I joined, I actually really have I have a lot of gripes about that. And right, but it's okay because they got me in the game and it got me around the right kind of people. And that investment has, you know, more than taken care of itself. So, you know, I feel like in retrospect, hey, that group maybe wasn't the right group, but hey, did it get me to the next step? It sure did. Got me to the next level. So nobody's going to have a perfect plot forward, right? You know, it's not just up and to the right straight line. It's all over the place. But just to recap, I think it's a referral from somebody that you like, just like kind of finding a doctor, finding an attorney, finding, you name it. If you're looking for a coach or a mentor, okay, who do you like and respect that, and they can give you a good referral to somebody?
Right, and I think that's key because you know, without that, you're kind of running blind. And if you're just finding a Facebook group or somebody else, and you're like, well, this seems like it might be okay, you know, I think you're more gambling than if you have a buddy that says, hey, this is a great group of guys or a great group of people, get involved. So that's super cool. What was it like when you guys took your property management in-house? Because when you first started, you had a third-party property management company, right?
Oh, yeah.
What was that transition like?
It was interesting. You know, we learn through pain, right? And so I really have embraced pain because pain is the arrows along the way that point to success. All pain. It's never like, man, I'm going to go make X amount of money, or it's never a positive goal that push. I wish it was, hey, I'm going to build this wealth for my family, leave a legacy, and it's just going to be great. It's, oh God, this is awful. This has to change. How do we do it? Okay. Correct a little bit. Go along. Oh God, this is awful. We can never do this again. How do we fix this? And it puts, you know, you course correct through pain and mistakes. And pretty much, I think the reason we've been successful is we tried everything else. Mm. Like, I've done so many things wrong. I think I've done them all.
Right.
But now things are working because, well, I've done everything else and I know not to do that and that and that and that and that and that. And it seems like this last thing left is the pathway to success. So very much a trial and error. But with regard to the management company, we had one management company that came recommended, big company, managing two large assets for us. Awesome NOI. And I'm like, hey, these things are rocking and rolling. They weren't paying vendors. They just weren't paying them, period. So it took months for that to catch up. And then we realized our true numbers were completely wrong because we started getting liens put against these properties, things like that, right? So it was so painful. I said, man, I cannot do this. And I just do not trust another third-party company to come in and take this over. And then some timing worked out with a guy that I had a relationship with that was working for another management company where he left. And that was really it for me. It was based on the person. We started texting. I said, well, what are you going to do, man? And I thought maybe I could bring him on as an asset manager. Starting the management company was really about finding the right person and the way the timing worked out on that. And so we had enough properties for me to basically take a risk and say, hey, I'm going to write a check myself. I think it was $40,000 check to start a new company and just say that cash is going to float this company, get it up and running, and do the takeover. For the first 3-4 months, it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work on the guy that I hired. I basically said, I'm hiring you. This is a big promotion for you, but you're also going to have to do all of it in the beginning. And he did a great job. So we got that up and running. We got incredible staff on site at the properties. We've got a true management company now. We have some additional hires at the corporate level on the management company, and that's gone well. But it was rocky, and this was right in the middle of COVID. So in March, April, 2020, I'm going, yeah, the world's falling apart. Hey, let's start a new company. Why not? Right? Why not? So I've got a sense of adventure for these things. I was willing to take the risk, and it worked out. And I actually love it now. I think because of the person I have in that role.
Right.
You know, Dan Sullivan of Strategic Coach just came out with a book called Who, Not How. And that encompasses so much wisdom about how I'm trying to run things today, because things have gotten big. I can't do it all for sure. I mean, we're long past that. And it's really about who can we get for these outcomes in the right seats.
Man, that's amazing. That's amazing. Let's jump into the final four here. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Get around the right people, like in the room. That's the best thing you can do. Positive peer pressure.
Love it. What is one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Trying to give away everything I can. As for, in terms of tasks, so that that my energy and my focus is as preserved and strong as possible. So it's a game of trying to give everything away so that I've got my time, energy, and focus to focus on what matters most.
That's awesome. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
I started the DJE Foundation. It's a 501c3 foundation last year. And our goal is to give away $100,000 this year in 2021. Different stuff. There's a couple of charities we support. There's an orphanage in the Philippines a friend of mine started. Lots of cool stuff there.
Man, that's awesome. Good for you. Devin, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
The website's the best way. DJE Delta Juliet Echo Texas.com.
Wonderful. Devin, thanks so much for your time. Do appreciate it.
Sam, this is great. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor, and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.